You are Locked On Raptors, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Hey, how's it going? Welcome to episode number 300 of Locked On Raptors for Friday, March 23rd. I'm your host, Sean Woodley of LockedOnRaptors.com and RaptorsHQ.com. If you don't know that by that, if you don't know that by now, I don't know what to say. It's been 300 episodes, but thank you for tuning in. Locked On Raptors, of course, is part of the Locked On Podcast Network, which hosts team-focused shows for all 30 NBA teams, as well as Locked On Fantasy with Josh Lloyd, Locked On NBA with David Locke. The NFL shows are heating up ahead of the draft as well, so check out the corresponding Locked On NFL show for the team that you like in murder sport. Make sure you find all the shows that you like on iTunes separately. Leave them a rating, leave a review if you find a host that you dig. And if you find Locked On Raptors, which you should do, it's very easy. You can find it on iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, all the different places where podcasts are held. You can leave a rating or a review, and it's very helpful. It takes no time at all. It moves us up the rankings. It keeps us up in the conversation and visible and all that stuff. So thank you in advance for doing that. And let's get to it. On today's show, the 300th episode, I can't even speak today, which is pretty fitting considering how I've bumbled my way through the first 299 episodes. But today, for the 300th episode spectacular, it's a mailbag podcast with our friend Joe Wolfon from The Score. How's it going, buddy?
It's going really well, man. I'm honored to be here for the tricentennial.
I can think of no higher honor to bestow upon somebody, so...
I really appreciate it. Congratulations, Ben. That's a lot of episodes.
Yeah, it certainly is. I think if the bosses were to go back and listen and sort of do the math, I don't think I've held up my 5 shows a week bargain, but I'm close enough, I think. And 300 episodes sure is a lot. All right, we're going to do mailbag questions. We got a bunch of interesting questions in today, so this should be fun. I got to find the tweet that I sent out with all the replies. All right, here we go. This one from Locked On Raptors contributor, LeBon Osman at LeBonStar1, the franchise on Twitter. Rank the bench players from least to most importance. We can kind of leave out the tertiary guys, I suppose, the Malcolm Millers and the Bebe Nogueras and those and the like, I suppose, unless you want to slot them in ahead of any of these guys. Joe, rank the bench players from least to most important.
Yeah, I mean, if we wanted to get really cruel, we could maybe consider like swapping in Malcolm Miller ahead of Norm. But I think if we're just going with your main bench contributors, I feel like Norm has to be at the low end of that totem pole. Mm-hmm. And probably Siakam at the top, and then I couldn't even begin to try and rank the guys in the middle. Like, do you have a sense of which of, like, between Poeltl, DeLon, Van Vliet, and
Miles,
who am I forgetting, and CJ? Like, I guess maybe CJ is like more important than those other guys, just because there's really nobody else on the team that does anything close to what he does.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just like, the ability to have somebody like that who is such an off-ball threat that you basically like can't sag off him at all, and like to have the ability to just like catch and shoot as quickly as he does is something that you can't really replicate anywhere else on the roster.
Mm-hmm.
But between like DeLon, Van Vliet, and Poeltl, I don't know how I would sort that out. What do you think?
I find it really hard as well. I think Wright, Poeltl, DeLon, Poeltl and DeLon, Wright and DeLon are the same people. Good God, this has been a bad start. I was up at 4:30 for radio, so I'm totally out of it today. No, I think Wright, Poeltl, and Fred are kind of all in that mix. But I would say for me, maybe in like a grander scale sort of thing, I'd say Norm is probably more important than maybe even Wright and like Poeltl, just because him finding himself again and kind of regaining the form that has saved the Raptors' asses 2 times in the playoffs is kind of important. And it's the upside of him finding himself again is significant. So I would say maybe it's kind of a bit of a short end of the stick type of thing to put him last. In terms of like current contributions, of course, he's last. But I think in the grander scale, like, he's very important, and they have him locked up to a contract that's going to pay him pretty well over the next few seasons, and it's going to be necessary for him to either in order to play himself into being trade bait or to just play himself into that contract and being useful. I'd say of those guys, it's so ridiculous to say this, but I think maybe Poeltl's the least important, just because I think Jonas has done a reasonable enough job playing defense, and I think they have enough guys who can play at the five. Like, I think Serge is going to play at the five at some points. So maybe Poeltl's skills, while he's incredible, and we've talked about Poeltl's defense frequently, and it's sort of a sort of erotic thing for, I think, a lot of Raptors Twitter watching Jakob Poeltl play defense. I think maybe his contributions are a little bit canceled out because some other guys do it. I would say Miles is actually probably the most important ahead of Siakam just because of the shooting that you mentioned. And like, I think there will be a time where CJ Miles factors into lineups where you're just not going to be able to play Siakam. He might actually play in lieu of Siakam at certain times because of the shooting. Obviously, Siakam provides so many other things, and you can make a really good argument that he is more important. But I think Miles's skills are just more reliable, I suppose. And so I'd put him ahead of Siakam. I would say Fred's probably third behind those two just because his shooting's really good as well. And you can have him out with that closing lineup with DeMar and Kyle, and ideally have him handle the ball a little bit less, maybe work off ball a little bit and be sort of a deterrent to teams sending too much help either DeMar or Kyle's way. But I think regardless of what role he plays, I think his shooting and just his playmaking, which has improved so much this season, his finishing around the basket, I think that has kind of put him ahead of DeLon, even though I would still think DeLon is probably like a more talented player than Fred and probably has a higher upside. I think Fred to this team is, you know, you could argue that Fred's like the fourth or fifth most important player on the team, which is kind of insane for an undrafted guy from last year. And then I would go Wright and then Norm, although Norm, Wright, Poeltl last. But like those three, I think are kind of in the mix there. I think Fred, Miles, and Siakam, like if the rotations is going to shorten down come playoff time, I feel like Fred, Miles, and Siakam will be the guys that don't get cut off in terms of their minutes. And I honestly, I think if it gets shortened, we'll probably see different variations of who on the bench ends up playing. But like, yes, they'll be playing eight guys, but they have 12 different guys they can go to at certain spots in a given game. So I think Wright and Poeltl will have places in those series. But I think Fred, Miles, Siakam are probably the firmest in the rotation spots. And I think that's probably for good reason.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's really easy just to forget the contributions Poeltl makes because they're so not flashy. But if you look at like numbers as far as defending at the rim this year, like his defensive field goal percentage at the rim is up there among like the absolute best in the league. Like he's up there with Embiid, he's up there with Gobert.
Yeah,
and he's really just become like an unbelievable rim protector. And with what's happened to Serge like the second half of the season, or even you could argue like since he came to Toronto, like he just hasn't been that guy. Like they don't have any other rim protectors really that are capable of altering shots at the hoop the way that Poeltl is. But like I think your logic is sound. I just think I just think his contribution gets slept on sometimes, and I really respect like what he's able to do just as far as like going straight up, challenging shots. His timing is unbelievable, and even at the offensive end, like his ability to just like catch the ball and like make a move toward the hoop. Like he might catch it at the dotted line and like make a move toward the hoop and hit a layup without taking a dribble. Like he does that all the time, and it's really hard and really impressive. So
yeah, ranking the 6 through 12 players in the Raptors, not easy.
Which is, we're lucky to have them all is where I land on that.
Yeah,
so
it's a pretty enviable problem to have. One thing that could sort of change the calculus on who the most important among these guys is a potential starting lineup change. And like, I don't think it's going to happen in the regular season. I think OG did enough early in the season to sort of warrant maybe them trying to figure it out with him now that he's back from injury and seeing if he can kind of regain some of the confidence and just sort of steadiness that he showed early in the year. But if you're picking from this group of guys, and I guess Poeltl and maybe Siakam are excluded from this, but I think everyone else is kind of in the running. If you're going to sort of shake up the starting five going into the playoffs or in a playoff series, mid-series, who would you think is the most likely, and maybe this is matchup dependent, but who would you sort of pinpoint as maybe the most likely guy to eventually maybe see a spot start or two in the playoffs if OG continues to waver?
I think it's got to be CJ, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. He works really well with that bench group, but I feel like, I don't know. I what more do you want playing alongside DeMar and Kyle than a guy who is basically just gonna run around screens and spot up and catch and shoot, you know? And like OG's defensive contributions have been invaluable, and he's also shown the ability to confidently knock down shots from outside at various points. But In the playoffs, I just feel like you might see defenses completely ignore him, and that's really going to cramp things up. And I think the best guy that you can bring in to grease the wheels a little bit is going to be CJ. And I think you probably, if OG's really not giving you enough, you probably take the trade-off that comes with having CJ in there, and what you're going to lose at the defensive end by making that swap.
Give me DeLon. Give me small forward DeLon.
Okay.
Because if you're going to stick something next to those guys, defense, as much as shooting is important, defense might also be kind of important next to DeMar. Like, DeLon's not going to be able to guard LeBron, but he'll be able to guard Chris Middleton or someone like that in the playoffs if you really want him to. And he's, I mean, not a crazy huge volume, just 1.4 attempts per game, but he's a 40.5% catch-and-shoot three-point shooter this season. Like, obviously, his stroke is kind of slow, and it's a small enough sample that you can have some trepidation as to whether or not it'll carry over into a playoff series, but I think it's good enough that it can work, especially if you have Serge out there shooting, and Jonas continues to sort of provide, even if he's not shooting a ton of threes, he kind of provides a little bit of just, like, breath to the offense by hanging around at the elbows and stuff like that. I mean, it will be totally matchup dependent, of course, but CJ's defense worries me a little tiny bit, and I kind of like CJ, if you're going to still continue to run out bench units with, like, three or four bench guys, I kind of like CJ playing with Pascal and Yak because it kind of counteracts those two not having anything in the way of shooting.
True.
And I think you could kind of run into some issues if you're running those two out there without just the prolific shooter that is CJ Miles with them. But no, there aren't bad options. I mean, it'd be nice if OG would kind of rediscover the form that he had early in the season. It's not even so much his shooting. It's not even so much his shooting that's concerning me. It's his defense that just looked a lot, I don't know, lazier, or just, like, he just looks less attentive. He's less able to stay in front of guys, and maybe that's just him kind of getting his bearings after being hurt, but I don't know. This is going well away from the question, but are you, like, how concerned are you that OG is just not going to be the guy he was early this season for the remainder of this year?
I think I'd be more concerned about it if we weren't having this conversation, if we weren't having, you know, if we weren't bringing up, like, all these other viable options and ways that they could kind of mitigate that. So I'm not so concerned about it just because this is, you know, exactly the reason that you want to have depth on your team, is because if one guy gets injured, if one guy starts to struggle, then you just have a lot of different options and a lot of different looks that you can throw out there. But if you're asking me, like, do I think that he's going to get back to being the guy that he was at the start of the season come playoff time, I'm pretty skeptical of that.
Yeah.
Just because for a guy who's coming off a major knee surgery and has never played a season nearly this long before, it kind of makes sense to me that at this point in the season he might be starting to feel it, especially having that ankle injury. And I don't have any concerns about him long term. I still think he's going to be, like, a really important piece for this team going forward.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's very possible that he's a guy who ends up kind of falling out of the rotation in the playoffs.
Yeah, and, like, that's going to happen. And if you're going on meritocracy, like, he is the guy to fall out at this point. So at least the Raptors have some leeway and things they can do. And they've played a lot of three guard lineups, 2 point guards in DeMar. Like, I think they can work their way around it. Let's move on, because we have 14 minutes of content from one question. Let's move on to question number two from Robert Flom from the Clippers SB Nation blog. Top three favorite and least favorite fan bases on NBA Twitter. What do you got?
I feel like I don't really have any favorite fan bases on NBA Twitter. I got, like,
just because Twitter, the phrase NBA Twitter is involved, it's all inherently bad.
But I feel like NBA Twitter sort of breaks down, or at least if we're talking about fan base Twitter, it kind of breaks down along two lines, which is, like, the exceptionalist fan bases and, like, the exceptionally needy fan bases, which, like, I think we both know where, like, Raptors Twitter falls in that category. But
I think it's kind of towing the line between both right now, so making it doubly obnoxious.
Yeah. Well, we're really in that sweet spot, right, where we've been needy for so long and suddenly, like, have this incredible team that we have no idea what to do with.
Yeah.
So, like, both of those things are extremely annoying in their own ways, but I find the neediness Twitter, like, a little bit easier to tolerate, just because I sort of can relate to it more.
Right.
So like those exceptionalist fan bases like Boston's and the Lakers are the ones that probably grind my gears the most. But I don't know if you have any kind of specificity to add to that.
That's Boston's definitely on the list. I have probably a list of more than three. I think it's probably Boston. Houston's pretty. I don't really interact with fans as much as I do just like writers and people who cover the team and stuff. And like mostly just like my interactions with them kind of will dictate how I view the entire Twitter, whether it's fans or writers or whoever. But Houston's seems, and like this is probably a product of them having like a very bad broadcast and being a very homerish and oddly needy broadcast for a team that's as good as the Houston Rockets are. But like the Rockets kind of grind me a little bit. The Utah Jazz, I think their fans are very, very intense. But Jazz writers, I think are fine and good. And I think, you know, the boss man, David Locke, certainly does an excellent job covering that team and does a really good job nationally covering the league as well. But yeah, I think Jazz fans are a little intense. And Lakers is good too. Derrick Rose fans are probably the worst.
Fair, yeah. Do we call that a fan base?
But... Yeah, it's certainly a fan base, I think.
Or
just like a garbage pit, one of the two.
Fair. Yeah.
My favorites.
In a nutshell.
Yeah, my favorites. I really enjoyed dealing with Bucks people last year. Bucks fans were, and they've kind of taken a turn this season where they're just angsty all the time because they hate their team so much.
Yeah.
But like every Bucks person I've dealt with is good. Robert asked the question, and so maybe this is biased, but like Clippers Twitter has always been pretty nice because there's like five people on Clippers Twitter, and they're all reasonably nice to deal with. Knicks Twitter rules. It owns. They own the, like, they're neither needy nor are they arrogant. They're just
they've cornered the market on self-deprecation.
Yes,
for sure.
And it's perfect. Do you have any other to add to that?
No, not really. Yeah. I think you nailed it.
All right. Next one here from @SixDog. Excuse me. If you had to listen to a podcast hosted by one or two of the current Raptors, who would they be and what would their pod be called?
I mean, I guess like Yak and Skills would just be the obvious one.
Yeah.
Because the name is right there, but judging by their work in those Google commercials, I don't know if that would actually be an enjoyable listen at all.
They do a podcast with an Alexa thing.
Yeah. And the Alexa would be the most engaging personality in that part of it. No, I'm just kidding. I feel like those guys actually like have really good chemistry and they'd be pretty fun to listen to.
Yeah.
They just need some screen coaching.
Yeah.
For those Google commercials, but there was actually like, I think it was in the last Open Gym. It was like a great segment where the two of them were just like hanging out, shooting the shit, and it was pretty awesome.
I think Yak could host like a solo like X's and O's heavy podcast, like a Dunked On type thing. He's very good at talking about X's and O's with. He's probably my favorite rapper to talk just like actual basketball questions with.
True.
So maybe he'd be good for that. CJ doing a podcast would be pretty good.
Yeah, for sure. He's probably like just like the most purely charismatic dude on the team, right?
Yeah, just like him interviewing rappers. The Mass Fresco pod.
Nice.
Yeah, something like that.
I like it.
Yeah. All right, moving on. Next question here from @RapsFan1237. Why are people still scared of the Bucks? Joe, any theories?
I think it's pretty simple, right? the memory of that series last year is still pretty fresh. And of course the Raptors won that series, which you maybe wouldn't know judged by the way people talk about it, but it was super stressful. I don't think anybody needs to be reminded of that. And going up against Giannis for six games in a row was really unsettling and really terrifying. And he's probably only gotten better since then, so I understand just like not wanting to play against a team where they're going to have like, I think by far the best player on the floor in a series. Like that's just a frightening proposition. I don't know if it's much more complicated than that. There's, for me, my feeling has always been like Milwaukee should play Giannis at center more, and they never really do. And I feel like maybe in a playoff series, that's the kind of wild card that could swing things in their favor and make them just more deadly than they've been throughout the season. And they just have like a lot of different lineup combinations that would give me some pause and make me a little bit concerned from a matchup perspective. But yeah, they've been really bad this year, so I'm not overly concerned. Like that seems like it's probably going to be the first round matchup. I'm not overly concerned that the Raptors are going to lose to them. It's just going to be really annoying, and I don't need that in my life. Like I don't need six games of Giannis in my life again. You know.
Yeah, I'm gonna let everyone in on a little secret. The Bucks are ass.
Yeah.
They have no idea what they're doing. They don't know how to play basketball.
They were the same last year. Like that's the thing. You know, like they weren't good last year either.
I think honestly it's weird because Jason Kidd was an awful coach and his defense was really silly. It oddly worked against the Raptors for a little bit, and
yeah,
I think that's like one of the few matchups that, against which it would kind of work. But when Thon Maker stopped being like Hakeem Olajuwon, at least defensively,
true,
that kind of went away, and they don't have any offensive identity. Like Eric Bledsoe's hijacking the offense way too much, and I think you're very okay with that. And I just, they don't really know how to play basketball. Like that's the best way I can sum up the Bucks. Giannis is amazing,
yeah,
but Giannis was incredible in that series last year, and it still wasn't even close to enough. So I know they are like, I don't even know if they're that much better than they were last year. Like they have Bledsoe, but like Maker has taken a huge drop off. John Henson is a guy that I feel like Jonas can just eat for lunch 6 games or 5 games or 4 games, whatever it takes. Like,
yeah,
I don't know. They're not scary to me. I'd rather play the Bucks than the Heat just because I think it's a more entertaining matchup. And also I think it's just as easy for the Raptors. And also the Raptors are just a better team and probably just a little bit beyond the Bucks in terms of like their level of play. And DeMar, I would argue, is a lot closer to being the best player in the series than he was last year. He's not the best player in the series, but he's closer to it. So like the disparity there is different. And like Kyle Lowry, knock on wood, won't be coming back from being off for a long time with a wrist injury. Like I think there's a lot of reason to be confident that the Raptors of this year are just that much more well equipped to beat the Bucks pretty handily. I would pick that to be a 4 or 5 game series. I really would.
Wow. Yeah, I mean, so one thing I'll add is Lowry's always had trouble with Bledsoe. Like,
right,
just generally really quick guards give him trouble because that's, like, his forte, he does a lot of good things on defense, but his forte is not staying in front of quick guards.
Right.
And Bledsoe has typically kind of torched him. And then the other thing with Henson, like, I don't know why he plays as often as he does, but that just feels like a guy to me who might be promptly excised from their rotation if things aren't working out, and then that's when I think they could start going with like Giannis at center lineups that the Raptors wouldn't have obvious answers for defensively. But I do think the Raptors are way better, and I think they still won that series in 6 games last year despite the fact that they didn't play well at all. So as long as they can avoid a similar drop off from regular season to playoffs, then I don't see any reason why you wouldn't be right, why that wouldn't be a 5-game series. But again, I just think the memory of Giannis doing unmentionable things to the Raptors is still pretty fresh in people's minds, and that's probably why we're all still a little frightened of that matchup.
That's fair. I'd be more scared of Eric Spoelstra than whatever's coaching the Bucks right now.
A piece of white bread.
I'd literally never heard of Joe Prunty before he got that job. Like, I had no idea who this guy was.
Yeah, I'm with you.
All right, next question here from Josh at Sergio Dip. On the off chance the Raps make it out of the East, what's your celebration routine looking like?
Oh, man. I don't even know what I would do.
This has never been a question we've had to contemplate before.
Yeah. I mean, I guess you probably want to be part of like that Young and Dundas celebration, you know, high stepping across the intersection
with Tupac.
And I don't know. Like I honestly don't even know. I feel like mostly what I do in the playoffs when the Raps just have like a really feel good win is, like by the time I'm like done working and like done writing about it, just like go home and like watch the game over again and like read every piece of writing about the Raps that I can and just like really like soak it in to the fullest possible extent. Because I don't know, man, we spent so much time just rooting for an irrelevant team, and above all, just being relevant is pretty intoxicating.
Yeah, it's really cool. It's different for me, I guess, if like I'm at the game. If it's a home game where they clinch, I'll be there, so I can't really celebrate. I mean, I'll be celebrating inside. And if you want to, I mean, you're not supposed to cheer on press row, but when you're sitting next to Dan Reynolds, it's hard not to just get caught up in his energy.
Yeah.
Like road games, I usually like have to medicate with a lot of alcohol because I'm just so stressed out.
Fair enough.
And wherever that takes me, I guess, will be the celebration routine. But yeah, like you, I like reading all the stuff, listening to podcasts, probably do a podcast, like a celebratory podcast with I'll just get all, I'll get like a 20-way call going with all of the guests of the show. We'll just shoot the shit for a little while and enjoy it all. But yeah, here's hoping that happens. LeBron's very scary, but I'm still reasonably hopeful that a finals appearance is in the cards for the Raptors. Sorry, were you going to say something?
No, I mean, okay. Yeah, that's, I'm in the same boat, and like that's really a terrifying place to be, to feel like I'm almost to the point where I'm feeling, I guess I'm not feeling like it's finals or bust this season, but like I'm really at a point where I feel like the Raptors are the favorites to come out of the East, and that's frightening, man, because then it becomes, you can't even really like feel good about anything until you actually get there.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like everything up to that point is just going to be stress, and then once you get there, it's just going to be like relief. And that's part, like, this regular season's been so enjoyable just because like they've already exceeded expectations to such a significant degree.
Mm-hmm.
But once the playoffs start, like, I feel like all that's going to go away. You know, it's not going to be fun anymore. It's not going to be like carefree anymore. It's just going to be stress all the time. And I don't know if I'm ready for that.
Yeah. I'm trying to rationalize it to myself a little bit because it, like, coming into this season, this was never supposed to be the all in year. Like, there were still two more years of this window beyond this. And you can argue that they might even be better next year, considering the development that you would expect to pencil in for guys like Pascal and OG and Yak and DeLon and Fred and all these guys, assuming Fred's back. Like, there's a lot of upside with the back half of this roster to make it even more of a hilariously good bench and good team in the regular season. So, like, I don't think this is by any means, like, the end of the line. But you look at the way the East is developing and, you know, the Sixers seem to be ahead of schedule. The Celtics are going to get Hayward back. And, you know, probably another stupid high pick or whatever. And Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown will be good. And they'll probably trade for someone good also because that's what the Celtics do. But I think maybe this year is kind of looking like maybe the best shot. And it's terrifying to think that if it doesn't happen, then maybe the opportunity never comes again. Even though I think it'll still be on the table, maybe just to a lesser degree of likelihood. But yeah, man, it's all very, very scary. Next question here comes from Wednesday's guest on the podcast, Dharma Nayak. What is your top five ranking of NBA guys who would definitely get into a fist fight at every chance on the court if it was allowed, like in the NHL?
I mean, Serge is like an obvious one to throw out because he pretty much does that anyway, despite the rules not being NHL rules. So I feel like he's got to be in that top five. And then Draymond, probably.
Mm.
I feel like maybe Robin Lopez. I feel like he's a guy who would maybe just do it for the theatricality of it. I don't know. I'm just like trying to think of other ornery dudes who would be happy to drop the gloves.
Yeah.
Like Rondo, maybe.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of guys who are like Colton Orr, Fraser McLaren adjacent. Just like not very good players who could maybe carve out a role in the league just by fighting. You
yeah.
know what I mean?
I don't. Oh, I mean, like, okay, Dante Jones isn't in the league anymore, but he like fits that bill to a T, right?
Are we sure he's not gonna get signed by the Cavs in the next week?
He's gonna get signed by the Cavs to punch somebody in the nuts in the first round, absolutely. Yeah. he would be an awesome enforcer for sure.
Yeah, I think Surge is the easiest one. I think honestly, if you're looking at like end of bench, like what if Bebe just took like a heel turn as a fighter to sort of try to keep his job in the league? Well, it's not working out for him as a backup center. Just be a fighter when the new rules come in and fighting's allowed mid play. You know, change.
Oh man, not, first of all, he strikes me as like more of a pacifist. But also, I just think how would he even go about fighting people? Like, I can't picture it. I guess he's got a long reach. So, but I feel like there'd be a lot of guys who'd just be able to like get inside him and start delivering body blows, and I don't know what he would be able to do about it. But that's a funny image.
Yeah, Bebe fighting, the image to me is like tossing a bowl of spaghetti in sauce. like, which I guess is not the most intimidating thing in the world.
No. I mean, Bargnani would have been a great fighter if it were, so.
I don't even know. I'm trying to think of, like, NBA players. I can't think of any players right now. Marcus Smart, probably.
Yes.
Yeah, that dude would throw down. It's not like he needs his hands.
Yeah.
Unless it's just for him breaking falls when he flops.
Well,
he doesn't use it for shooting.
I mean, Lowry would probably be in there too, right? I feel like that guy's ready to throw hands.
Yeah, I don't know if he is. He kind of strikes me as a bit of a someone who wouldn't actually fight. But maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm underselling Lowry as a fighter. I mean, Boogie, I think, would definitely just fight people to, as a way to get rid of his frustrations with the world.
True.
And yeah, I wish he was around to show us, but he's not.
I mean, there's that one like enduringly amazing clip of him just like faking a punch at Jonas's head during I think it was like FIBA in 2014, and Jonas like literally scampering into the stands. Like I wouldn't want to fight Boogie.
I don't know if I'd pick five, but my last one's Matthew Dellavedova. Another one of these guys who just might need to do it to hang on to a career. We forgot Blake Griffin. I mean, come on.
True.
Of course. Unless he's learned and doesn't want to break his precious hands anymore. And last one here from Eric Morris at Epic Moppus. Top three Raptors alternate uniforms of all time. Don't forget about the preseason Italy and Spain jerseys, although I don't think we're picking either of those.
I am a big fan of like the black and red ones. Those are probably my favorites.
Like the current ones they have now?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, okay.
Yeah.
I don't even know what the alternate and main jersey is anymore because the Nike ruined it, but yeah, the black and red ones are awesome.
I know, I feel like there's been this historical revisionism about those original purple jerseys.
They suck ass!
They're pretty gross.
Yeah.
But obviously, like, you know, there's a nostalgia factor there that boosts them in the rankings. I just don't know if I could put them in my top three.
I just don't understand what the nostalgia was. They were terrible during that time. Like, they were god-awful with those.
Yeah, I think the nostalgia is tied up more in, like, seeing this like really good Raptors team, like these good Raptors players. I mean I guess they don't wear them anymore, but it was like that 2014-15 season when they brought them back.
Also a trash season.
It was, but like at the start of that season they were really good and there was a lot of optimism and we were still kind of getting used to having a good basketball team in Toronto.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that was part of it, just seeing those jerseys again, but seeing them worn by like an actual good team created this weird dissonance where everybody suddenly loved those jerseys just because I feel like it felt cool to see these trash jerseys associated with a trash team be worn by a team that was actually worthy. So I think that had a lot to do with it, but again, they're not good.
No. There are a few things that I've been more offended by than when Donovan Mitchell wore that jersey for his dunk in the dunk contest than the actual one Vince Carter was wearing.
Yeah, I was pretty offended by the dunk itself.
Yep, that was, I'd like to just have that scrubbed from memory. It's pretty ugly, pretty disrespectful, lots of adjectives I could apply to that. But I've already shat on the Jazz too much already in this podcast somehow. Yeah, I think Blake, I don't know, did you do Blake's poll when he put out the thing, like trying to get the rankings for all the jerseys?
No, I wasn't part of the straw poll, but okay. I did read it, and yeah, I was pretty surprised that those throwback purple jerseys were as high as they were.
Well, Blake detailed in there that one person voted them outside the top 10. That person was me. I think I put them like 12th. Yeah.
Yeah, well done.
Yeah, I thank you very much. It's one of my better accomplishments. Yeah, so the current black and reds, was it last year the blue Toronto Huskies ones? Those were great.
Yeah, I put those in the top 3 as well. Those were very sharp.
Yeah, and then the third one's tough. Can I just say not the camo ones? Like anything that wasn't the camo one with sleeves, I think I'm good with.
Fair enough. Yeah. I do feel like they're like, what do they call them? Like the city alternates this season?
Yeah.
The sort of OVO colors with the chevron, which I was pretty down on at the start. They've kind of grown on me a bit. Can't lie.
I think the court has helped because the court rules.
Absolutely.
I think they would be better if they were purple with the chevron. I think the chevron was an amazing stroke of genius because they've had it on their jersey low-key since like 1999. And it's never really been explained or anything. And it's just kind of been an understated shout to being North. And I like that as sort of the main design sort of center for it. But yeah, I would prefer purple. But what are you going to do, I suppose? I do like them now. Actually, they might be number 3 for me, even though I was kind of down on them too. Although the original OVO ones from last year with the same format. Like, I just like the Raptors base jersey right now. It's really nice. And any variation of that is pretty cool.
Yeah. I agree.
Is there any I have? No, that's all. We can wrap this here. We've gone on long enough.
Cool.
Joe, thank you so much for joining the 300th episode of Locked On Raptors. Do you have anything you'd like to plug right now? Tennis is kind of heating up?
Yeah. It's Miami Open right now, which is like a Masters 1000 tournament, 1 of 9. And from there, kind of go to clay season, and the French Open is in about 2 months, so unfortunately, like I only cover tennis during the slams, really. So
yeah.
I won't have any tennis writing to plug until then. But if anyone wants to follow me on Twitter at @Joey_YOU, follow along, and when the time comes, I will be dropping extremely overlong tennis features on your heads.
I kind of like it that it's only for certain times of the year. I don't know; it makes it feel that much more special. Because it's really good stuff, and I don't really watch or care about tennis, but I'll always read your tennis stuff because it's excellent. So
I appreciate it, man.
Yeah, that's gonna do it for today's episode. Thanks so much for tuning in, everybody. We'll be back again with some episodes next week. The first podcast of the week might end up being recorded on Sunday from the ACC because the Raptors play the Clippers. I'll be there for that, so that might be the first episode of the week. I promise I'm going to be doing the trivia soon, and Joe, you are still alive in the trivia tournament. I haven't recorded in a few weeks just because the Raptors' schedule, they just like to play on Sundays, and that's like the best day for me to record because I can hammer out all the recordings at once. But if it's not this week, I will start recording them once again next week, I promise, and I apologize for being a lazy ass when it comes to this, but the tournament will kick off, and we only have like 2 more recording days left, so it's not like there's that much content that you're waiting for. So to have it spread out, just like Joe's tennis writing, and maybe there's a good argument for it. Until then, you can subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, leave a rating, leave a review, do all that stuff, and thanks in advance for doing that, and we will talk to you next week with the beginning of the next 300 episodes of Locked On Raptors. Have a good one, everybody.